Your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day despite the fact that many people are complaining about what is considered a miscarriage of justice, the release of Bill Cosby. Maybe the country's most notorious currently imprisoned sex offender. 83 years old, he is riding home to Elkins Park, Pennsylvania, right now, out of prison, in a white SUV, which is terrible comparison to the white Bronco that O.J. Simpson was riding. O.J. Simpson was riding on a path that, it led ultimately not on his murder conviction, because he didn't have a murder conviction. It led ultimately to his imprisonment on other charges. He's free now. O.J. Simpson free and Bill Cosby free. Not that there's any comparison. Got it. But does his release, the decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, say anything about America, where we are, who we are? We will get to that. We will also be speaking to Senator Ted Cruz minutes from now about critical race theory. Is this just a phony GOP event to stir up racist sentiment? Or does the opposition to CRT, to critical race theory, to the idea that everything in America is based upon racial discrimination and racism, does the opposition to that theory really represent opposition to racism? There's a recent vote in the House on Confederate statuary where 67 Republicans voted with all the Democrats. And what will Ted Cruz do when it comes to the Senate? We will explore that with Senator Cruz. We also have the great privilege of speaking to Secretary Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State. What is the greatest threat facing the country right now? A Biden State Department has said domestic terrorism. Is that something with which Secretary Pompeo agrees? We will ask him, and we will be speaking later in the show to a very controversial mayor in Aurora, Colorado, who went undercover, got international headlines. He lived on the streets, slept on the sidewalks together with his homeless brothers and sisters. Now he wants to ban camping. Why? We will get to that as well on the Medved Show. Okay, first off, what the heck is going on with Bill Cosby? I had rested, I must tell you, comfortably in the assumption that I would never have to think about Bill Cosby again as long as he was alive. Of course, when there's obituaries and people talk about his legacy and da-da-da, then you want to think about him. But do we really want to think about Bill Cosby now? Some of the photographs of the 83-year-old brilliant comedian and once beloved actor. Now, the Cosby Show was an institution. But the way that this is being covered in mainstream media, the first major criminal conviction of the hashtag MeToo era fell apart on Wednesday, with former TV star Bill Cosby set free to walk free from prison as a free man. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled Wednesday, that's today, to vacate his 2018 criminal conviction and his sentence for sexual assault, finding that Cosby had been double-crossed by prosecutors who reneged on a public declaration not to prosecute him. He's been serving time in a state prison outside of Philadelphia, branded by the court as a sexually violent predator. A source told the Today Show that he will be out of prison in hours. Well, that was true. He already is out of prison. Everybody's mind is blown right now, said former federal prosecutor Niyama Rahman, speaking to the Daily Beast. This is extremely rare. This is unprecedented. Cosby was convicted of 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constant at his Elkins Park, Pennsylvania home in 2004. A handful of women were allowed to give harrowing testimony during the trial to show a pattern of similar conduct which is allowed under Pennsylvania law. Now, the thing to keep in mind is they say this is the first criminal conviction of the hashtag MeToo era. Most of the hashtag MeToo era is about inappropriate relationships, inappropriate touching, inappropriate language. This is so very much worse because the charges against Bill Cosby, not just in the Constand case that put him into jail, but so many of the cases against him involve drugging people, drugging them, people who he came into his home and he would feed drugs to and then would basically assault sexually. And that's a very different level of depravity, it seems to me, morally and by any standard at all. And CNN legal analyst Eli Honig did a pretty good job. He was talking about what actually happened with Cosby here and explained that what the court decided was nothing to do with a not guilty verdict, because Cosby is as guilty as could be. He basically has admitted his own guilt. But this is Eli Honig speaking on CNN, clip 11.
The court did not say Bill Cosby is innocent. The court did not say Bill Cosby didn't do any of this. What the court said is a deal is a deal. And going back to 2004, as Laura said, the DA at the time, Bruce Castor, made a deal, essentially, the court found, with Bill Cosby. That deal was the DA said, we don't think we have enough evidence to charge and criminally convict Bill Cosby. Now, we can certainly second guess that, but that was Castor's opinion at the time. And as a result, because the DA had said we won't be charging criminally, that forced Bill Cosby to testify in a civil deposition, because if you have criminal charges hanging over you, you can take the fifth. But once the DA says I'm not going to be charging you, then you cannot take the fifth. And that's the deal that the court said that led Bill Cosby to give this deposition testimony, which was then used against him. And then it doesn't matter what happened after that. Is new DAs came in and they said, we're not living by that deal. We're going to charge him anyway. But the Supreme Court said, too bad, future prosecutors, later prosecutor. The deal that Bruce Castor made back in 04, 05, that's a deal. That's binding.
Well, that's binding because of the reliance of Bill Cosby on that deal. The point being that if it's not a criminal case, if it's just a civil case, in other words, if you're not looking at going to jail, you're looking at paying damages, and that was the case that Cosby faced, there's no Fifth Amendment. You can't say, no, I refuse to testify on the grounds that may incriminate me. You have to testify. And he did. And he said stuff in his testimony, including the fact that admitting that in several cases he had drugged women, that led to his later prosecution with a different prosecutor. So who's to blame for this mess right now? Clip 12.
Cosby has not been exonerated. Nobody has said he didn't do it. Nobody has said he is innocent. The people to blame here are the prosecutors. And there's two aspects to that. First of all, Bruce Castor, the district attorney who made this deal back in 2004, 2005, where he essentially said, I don't believe we have enough evidence to prosecute him criminally. That enabled Bill Cosby, forced Bill Cosby to testify in his criminal deposition. That's the deal that Bruce Castor made. Can he be faulted for that? Absolutely. He bears blame for that. And then part two is that future prosecutors came along after Bruce Castor and they said, we're not playing by that deal. We're not observing that deal. And that's what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said is the legal problem here. They said, once Bruce Castor made that deal, we're not going to prosecute you. Like it or not, good deal or bad deal, future prosecutors that came after him were bound by that. And when they went back on that deal and tried him, that's what they say violated Bill Cosby's rights. That's what this decision was about.
Okay, Bruce Castor name sound familiar to anybody? Bruce Castor was actually, during President Trump's second impeachment, he was one of his lead attorneys. He was the one who made that opening statement that was so difficult to follow and inept at during the impeachment trial. We will get to more on that. We'll also be speaking coming up with Senator Ted Cruz. And is it appropriate to remove the statues of white supremacists, segregationists, and advocates of slavery? We'll get to that coming up on the Medved Show. Senator Ted Cruz coming up. We also look forward to speaking to former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. So much controversy roiling around the country On the Bill Cosby sexual dispute cases, the sexual assault cases, and the dispute involving turning him loose right now at age 83, going back home. He used to be called America's dad. Daddy's home, I guess, or will be soon. Not the same Bill Cosby, I think, that many Americans thought that we knew. Do you know how many women charged him with either rape, a drug-facilitated sexual assault, sexual battery, or other sexual misconduct? And two instances of alleged child sexual abuse, both involving girls 15 years of age. And then of women over 15, they're 60. I mean, this is Harvey Weinstein territory. And actually worse, because I think the evidence of Cosby drugging multiple victims is even worse. So what happens now? And what happens now with Bill Cosby is there are questions about other prosecution on the state level from various states, or maybe even federal prosecution. I think that given his age, that is unlikely. And he was convicted because of an assault at his home in January of 2004. He was convicted of three counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand in 2004, January. And the 83-year-old Cosby had served just over 2 years of his 3 to 10 year sentence and said he would sooner serve the full 10 years rather than ever express remorse for the assault he was convicted of. Did you know that? He was denied parole last year for refusing to participate in a jailhouse treatment program for sex offenders. I don't think he's likely to be giving any interviews on any of this. The statement by the state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania is there is only one remedy that can completely restore Cosby to the status quo ante. He must be discharged. And any future prosecution on these particular charges must be barred. We do not dispute that this remedy is both severe and rare, but it is warranted here, indeed compelled. Okay, does this have any deeper meaning or signification for what's going on in the country right now? I think there's a general sense that stuff isn't working in the United States. Now, this despite the fact that we're getting back to work. We seem to have done a pretty decent job with the vaccinations. We're going to fall just short of President Biden's goal of 70% vaccinated by the 4th of July. It looks like we'll be up at 68 or 69% of people who have at least one vaccine. But there's cascading news everywhere that we need to confront that things aren't functioning in America. Right now, there's a lot of concern about our electoral system. And the headline from New York City, where we thought we had a winner for the mayor of New York, and it was a winner that was good news for those of us who believe in supporting the police, not defunding the police or attacking the police. Eric Adams, former police lieutenant who was running as a law and order candidate largely, appeared to have won the election. But now they have front page news, which is horrifying. And it's horrifying not because of the result, because somebody else could win the New York mayoral election. And it doesn't even look like Maya Wiley, who was supposed to be the runner-up. It looks like Catherine Garcia, who originally seemed to have finished third. This is ranked choice voting. It's a whole new world. And it's a disaster. The Board of Elections has already admitted to multiple mistakes. They're going to be tied up in lawsuits. This is going to be worse than the doubts about the federal presidential election that have been largely sown by President Trump and his allies. But it's another indication of stuff just not seeming to work. What is so hard about casting and counting votes? Look, we have an entire economy I just got a delivery. I'm broadcasting from home, having broadcast earlier this week because of the heat at the studio, but broadcasting from home again, and they just made a delivery from Amazon. It was at the front door. Boom, 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 knock, knock. Okay, I looked out during the break. It was a big package from Amazon. This entire economy, which involves literally trillions of dollars now of people doing business on the internet, why the beep can't we vote on the internet if we want to? I mean, what is the point of the level of argument that we have right now? I was talking about this with Jeremy Steiner, pride of Hillsdale College. And look, this country does amazing things, incredible things. What was done by this country and our free enterprise system, and yes, there's certainly credit due to the Trump administration in developing these vaccines and developing them on an emergency basis and now getting them out, not just to America, but all around the world. This is an amazing thing. So why can't we run a damn election in the greatest city in the world? They should go to New York, as I did recently, and you look at the skyscrapers, and you look at the parks, and you look at the way New York functions. You know, even the subways work pretty well. Back in the old, old days, which I remember very well, of the 70s and 80s, the subways were a horror. They were covered with graffiti. They were filthy. They didn't work right. And now the subways work fine. And yes, you still see weird people on them. But the level of safety on the subway has been pretty good. So with all of that, why can't we do something to confront this crime surge that we're facing right now? Why can't you supervise an election without embarrassing incompetence and malfunctions that may, in fact, change the outcome? This is one of the three big elections. We have a governor's election coming up in Virginia that should be competitive. We have a, that's so sad. I just saw breaking news. Someone I greatly admired and got to know very well, just passed at age 88. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, the only individual who was Secretary of Defense in two different administrations, also a former White House Chief of Staff, and a former congressman from Illinois, and a Navy veteran, an old-time wrestler at Princeton. He is he was a great American, and I think he made great contributions to this country in an honorable and extraordinarily decent way. May his memory be a blessing, and may the mourners be comforted. Don Rumsfeld, passing at age 88. We will get to Senator Ted Cruz, who I know shares some of my admiration for Don Rumsfeld. Ted Cruz coming up on the Michael Medved Show. On the Michael Medved Show, it is a pleasure to welcome back to this show Senator Ted Cruz, the junior senator from the great state of Texas, and a leader of the Republican Party for, now 5, 6, 7 years since he emerged as a dynamic new senator from the state of Texas, reelected last time. Senator Cruz, first of all, do you want to say a few words of reaction to the sad news that we just heard about Secretary Rumsfeld, who passed at the age of 88?
Well, sure. Don Rumsfeld was an extraordinary leader. He was someone who was both our nation's youngest Secretary of Defense and our nation's oldest Secretary of Defense. And he was a chief of staff in the White House. He was a public service for decades. He was a man of great principle, of great integrity, and we mourn his loss.
Amen to that. And one of the things that I know that he would be concerned about is something that you've expressed great concern about, which is critical race theory, the entire attempt to indict America, to inspire a new generation to feel guilt rather than gratitude. Why is this issue, which some people dismiss as just an argument for the faculty lounge at universities, Why is this a crucial issue for the country's future?
Well, unfortunately, it started in the faculty lounge, but it has now crept into virtually every corner of society. If you look at the history of critical race theory, it originates in Marxism, and Karl Marx framed the world as a battle of economic determinism, as a socioeconomic battle between the owners of capital and the working class, the proletariat. And his solution was that a revolution of the proletariat was inevitable and a communist government was the only way to resolve that conflict. Well, that Marxist teaching then found its way to the faculty lounges, as you just referenced. And in fact, my alma mater, Harvard Law School, is where the critical legal studies movement was born. And that grew out of Marxism. But it viewed the legal structures in our country, whether the courts, whether the Department of Justice, whether torts and contract law, all of the law as simply a systemic method for oppressing the working men and women, for maintaining capitalism, that all of the laws that we regard as neutral and applying to everyone are in fact tools of oppression. And again, the solution that critical legal studies argued for was a communist government. Critical race theory grew out of that, and it takes the same worldview, but instead of dividing us up based on socioeconomic status, it divides us up based on race. And it views every institution in society as an institution of racial dominance. It views the history of America as irretrievably racist, as fundamentally about slavery and white supremacy. It teaches that all white people are racist and they can never not be racist, and that America is fundamentally, all of our institutions are about maintaining white supremacy. And this, all of these are lies, but the problem is it didn't just stay in a couple of faculty lounges. It made its way to the education graduate schools, and it's now being taught in K through 12 schools all across the country. It's also being taught in corporations. Big corporations are bringing in, quote, diversity trainers that are teaching this poisonous lie. And we're also seeing it in government, in the military, and federal civilian employees are being taught this garbage. And it is fundamentally, number one, tearing down our country. Number two, based on a fraudulent lie. And number three, dividing us on racial lines and inflaming racial tensions, which is, I think, profoundly dangerous.
And let me make it clear here. You in particular have been very outspoken. You're not opposed to people discussing slavery or remembering its impact. We played on the air your eloquent and effective speech on the Senate floor on behalf of the holiday of Juneteenth, which is now a federal holiday. There's another issue like that is heading to the Senate, Chuck Schumer says, which is the issue of Confederate statuary and a prominent statue of the infamous Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roger B. Taney. Would you consider joining the 67 Republicans who voted to remove those statues in the House? They did it yesterday. If this comes to the Senate?
Well, let me take them one at a time. Let me take, first of all, the point you said a minute ago about opposing critical race theory doesn't mean that you oppose teaching history or acknowledging our horrific legacy of slavery. Listen, of course, we should learn history and learn real history. And racism and bigotry is part of the human experience, is part of American history and the history of every other nation on earth. Our country had an original sin, and that was slavery. And it was grotesque and it was evil. But what the critical race theorists get wrong is that what is extraordinary about America is not slavery. Tragically, a great many civilizations throughout history have had one form or another of slavery. What is really extraordinary about America is emancipation, that we were formed from the very first days on the principles of equality and justice. You look at the Declaration of Independence, where Thomas Jefferson penned, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." He didn't just say just some men are based on their race. He laid out a proposition that all men are created equal. Now, to be sure, at the time, slavery was legal, and that was not the state of the law in our country. But the vision of this country was towards equality, and we fought a bloody civil war. 600,000 Americans lost their lives to expunge the evil that was slavery, and we have had civil rights battles that have been incredibly important, moving steadily towards that goal of equality and justice for all. And I'm one who very much agrees with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think American history, you look at the great abolitionist Frederick Douglass, who spoke out against the evils of slavery. He did so not by tearing down America, but by appealing to our founding principles and saying this is incompatible with our founding principles. So, yes, we should confront our history, but not based on the lie that everything about America is and always will be irretrievably evil. Now, let's shift to your second question.
Okay, and we've got about a minute left. So, Confederate statuary in the Capitol building.
So, I don't believe we should wholesale be removing Confederate statues. I don't think we should be erasing our history. I think you can have a debate about one individual statute or another. So, for example, I have spoken out in favor of Tennessee not commemorating Nathan Bedford Forrest, because he was the founder of the Ku Klux Klan. He was a slave trader, and I think his history is particularly shameful, and it shouldn't be commemorated in a positive way. To erase every Confederate figure from our history, I think, is a mistake. I think we should teach history and its context, and I think the left, it is only the first step is tearing down the Confederate monuments, but we're seeing the next step from the left, which is to go after Jefferson and Madison and Washington and even Lincoln and Douglas, and it quickly becomes absurd. We shouldn't try to erase history.
Okay, and for someone like Roger B. Taney, he right now is being replaced, according to the House legislation just passed with 67 Republican votes. He's being replaced by a bust of Thurgood Marshall. They're both from Maryland. One, the justice who held in Dred Scott that black people cannot ever qualify for citizenship, and the other, the first black member of the Supreme Court. Do you would you be comfortable with that switch of statuary?
I actually think that sounds like a very positive switch. The way it works in Statuary Hall is that each state chooses two individuals who will be commemorated there. And so if the state of Maryland wants to replace Roger Taney with Thurgood Marshall, I think that would be a very beneficial shift. But it ought to be up to the states to make that decision.
That's what a number of Republicans, like your colleague Mitch McConnell, seem to be saying. We will get to more on this. Senator Cruz, always such a pleasure to exchange ideas with you. We will be right back on the MedVet Show. Show. History is important, but it's complicated, and it always is, and which is why it's worth devoting at least a little bit of time to it. That's one of the things that we're going to be doing a week from today. No, it's not a week from today. It's 2 weeks from today when we are speaking and broadcasting from the Reagan Library, the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum in Simi Valley, California. It's free if you just sign up in advance. And it's filling up, actually. They're getting a great response. You should join us for a live broadcast of the MedVet Show from noon to 3 in Simi Valley, California. And then the broadcast speech and question period about my book, God's Hand on America. Go to michaelmedved.com and sign up to join us to talk about the meaning and direction of U.S. history at the Reagan Library. I want to go back to what we were talking about with Senator Cruz, because this is a fascinating issue where I was actually very pleased to see Kevin McCarthy, the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, leading 66 other members of the Republican caucus, which is, of course, a good chunk, not the majority, of Republican members of the House in voting along with all the Democrats, on this bill about the statuary and Statuary Hall and elsewhere in the Capitol. There's a policy that originated during the Civil War where every state is authorized to send two statues to represent distinguished people in those states that people would see when they entered the Capitol building. And the Capitol building statues are supposed to be for deceased citizens who were illustrious for their historic renown or for distinguished civic or military services. And the state would have to consider them worthy of this nation's national commendation to be featured in Statuary Hall. And again, two from each state. And it's fascinating to look at, of course, how this has changed. Some of the statues of Confederate figures have been removed and replaced by the initiative of the states. And the position of Mitch McConnell and the position of Senator Ted Cruz, which we just heard, is that it should be up to the states to remove some of these Confederate figures. Georgia is already working on removing Alexander H. Stephens, who was the vice president of the Confederacy. He's the one who delivered the cornerstone speech, who said that the cornerstone for the new Confederate States of America was the belief that the white race was superior and that the black race was inferior and only suited for slavery. And he said it. And I'm sorry, he wrote it down. It was proudly published everywhere. And yes, I think it's appropriate that the judgment of America today would be that someone who holds that point of view is not someone of illustrious service and distinguished civic virtue. No, it changed. And that's not true anymore. It doesn't mean that he will be erased from history, but it means that when he's in a hall of statues that are specifically there to be honored, maybe he's just not the right guy. And one of the things that is happening here is they're not destroying these statues. They're not breaking them up. They're going to be putting them someplace where they're not going to be seen until the states that provided the statues take them back. And some of this, it's very, very tough to argue against. And this is part of what Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the House, said right before he voted for this bill, which passed by an overwhelming margin in the House yesterday.
All the statues being removed by this bill are statues of Democrats. Madam Speaker, as I heard the Speaker talk earlier about removing of the four portraits of speakers in the hall, the same answer goes for that as well. They were all Democrats. What's interesting, the statues that need to be removed were sent to the Capitol by states that were majority controlled by Democrats, sent to a House that had a majority controlled by Democrats accepting of these statues. I think the bill should go further. Maybe it's time the Democrats change the name of their party. They may be desperate to pretend their party has progressed from their days of supporting slavery, pushing Jim Crow laws, or supporting the KKK.
Okay, that goes a little bit far. Of course the party has changed from the days of openly supporting slavery and supporting the KKK. But he's right. The Republicans do not have the same guilty history. Back at in the days when there was an attempt to confront the KKK with anti-lynching laws, those were always Republican initiatives. And it was the Democrats who were the party, once upon a time, of segregation and the KKK. The point about this entire method is we talked a little bit earlier this week about this awful thing of statues of George Floyd, which have been put up in Newark and Philadelphia and two places in New York and other places around the country. They were all vandalized. and they were all vandalized shortly after the statues were put up. And they were vandalized by white supremacist graffiti. What's the difference between trashing a statue of George Floyd, which you may believe doesn't really belong in a great place of public honor, and the idea of removing a statue of Roger B. Taney, who served 28 years as Chief Justice of the United States? He served longer than any Chief Justice other than John Marshall, who's generally considered the greatest of all Chief Justices. The difference is that the effort to replace Roger B. Taney with Thurgood Marshall, another distinguished justice of the Supreme Court and from the same state, is being done in an orderly fashion. Now, it seems to me that the Republicans gained a great deal in terms of credibility on this idea that, no, we are opposed to critical race theory that wants to indict the United States as permanently guilty, permanently scarred, permanently dysfunctional because of race issues. We don't support promoting that ideology. At the same time, we recognize America's failings in the past and, as Senator Cruz just mentioned, the heroic role of people fighting for emancipation, fighting to change that. And that's why the idea of, in an orderly way, Democrats and Republicans, people from every region of the country, as happened in the vote yesterday in the House of Representatives, vote to go ahead and make clear not what we honored in the past, but what we honor right now. Because there are visitors coming to the Capitol building from all around the world, and they are coming right now. The Virginia has already recalled its statues from Statuary Hall of Robert E. Lee and replaced it with Barbara Johns, who was a Virginia civil rights leader. North Carolina leaders decided to replace the statue of Charles Brantley Aycock, who was the leader of a violent white supremacist insurrection, and replace it with the Reverend Billy Graham, who I think people would say was a very appropriate replacement for Aycock, who was involved in literally a murderous attack on federal officials who happened to be black in Wilmington, North Carolina. You can't have that. Not appropriate. Many of the Republican arguments against the legislation from the majority of Republicans who still voted against it were that, no, we should get rid of these statues, but it should be up to the states to do it. But frankly, once you've made a majority vote in the House, and the majority vote is so overwhelming as this one was, the vote was 218 Democrats joined 67 Republicans. And so the vote was much more than 2-1, much more than 2/3 necessary. Let us maybe seize this moment as something that actually makes sense, on which people of goodwill can get together. And certainly people of goodwill should be able to get together on issues of foreign dangers and threats to the United States. The idea that right now you have Democrats who are seriously suggesting the most serious threat we face in the world is domestic terrorism. We will get to that with Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, former Army officer and a former congressman. He is one of the people being talked about as a potential president of this greatest nation on God's green earth.